This recording is a production of Faith Builders. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2013, held at Faith Builders on August 6th through 9.
Your name?
My name is Stephen.
Spelled
Stephen Gingrich.
A-N.
A-N at the end.
Is that a spelling mistake on the program?
No, it's not. It's spelled correctly on the program. My dad spelled it wrong on the birth certificate.
I thought it was probably a Spanish name.
Well, that's what he was thinking. He was thinking in Spanish and writing in English, I guess.
Okay. Anyway, you were born in Guatemala.
That's correct.
But you've lived 10, 15 years in Canada, and a few weeks here and there, and months in the States. So how many passports do you have?
Three.
So when he goes to Guatemala, he pulls out that one. When he comes to Canada, he pulls out that one. And when he comes to the States, he gives a nice smile and hopes that he gets into this fair land as well. He lived most of his life in Guatemala. He had a pet monkey called
Jojo, Jaco, and Jerry. There were three of them.
Three of them. And he learned a lot of lessons from them for the classroom, I assume. Anyway, he's in charge of a school in El Chal in the jungles of northern Guatemala. 130, 135 students, grades 1 to 8. He also taught for a year or so in Ontario, was my substitute teacher for a number of weeks. He's also my son-in-law. And because I'm rather difficult to relate to, it's developed a lot of character in him. Anyway, we thought it would be valuable to hear from a non-typical background and perspective and experience. So God bless you, Brother Stephen, as you share.
Well, that sounds to me kind of like another way of saying strange. You know, they say there are four kinds of speeches. There's the speech that you prepare, there's the speech you give, there's the speech that the people think they heard, and there's the speech that's recorded. And so we're going to go into this today, and I hope that we can learn how to relate to others. I would ask that you take your notes in spite of the prepared notes that you have in your binders. There are also some blank pages, at least there were in mine, with the title for this lesson. And just write as much or as little as you like and make it personal. Try to see your school and your situation. That was probably one of the most difficult things for me as I prepared this and went into it, was knowing what kind of situation you're in and how to apply it. So I'm not even going to try to do that. I'll just talk and let you apply it and let the Spirit of God work in your heart and alert you to those things that would make it a whole lot easier for you this coming year. Think about the people that you work with, partnering with your coworkers, all those people that it takes to make a school function properly. We try to work together, and I'm going to look at some things this morning that would help us to understand the people that we work with. And then I'd like to talk about the team and how to be a team player and how to work as a team. I have a little riddle I'd like to start with this morning, and I'd invite a response, and you don't have to do it individually. If you know the answer, just shout it out. It goes like this. A red man lives in the red house. A green man lives in the green house. A blue man lives in the blue house. Who lives in the white house? That's right. And I'd like to talk about houses today. This is, like I said, strange. Some things about people we need to understand. And I have 5 points how each one of us is like a house. We are all different. Imagine the street you live on and all the houses painted the same color. You could still find your own, because it's not the same structure. You don't have the same flowers planted out in front. And some people try to paint the world all the same color, or some use two. But I see a colorful world out there full of people, and I think that is the beauty and also the complexity of human relationships. We're all so different. So if we can get that down and understand that we're different, and we see the world differently, we're going to have a lot better time working as a team. In fact, it's good to be different. Try to imagine a team, baseball, if you like, where all of them are really good catchers. That would be a problem. Or if all of them are really, really good at bunting, it would cause no end of trouble. The first thing I'd like to look at that just helps us to understand that people are different, I'm not promoting this, just using it as an example. This is just a cut and paste from Wikipedia about the four temperaments, and there are four different kinds of people according to this theory, and it goes way back, and it kind of makes sense, and it kind of doesn't. What I want you to understand about this is that we're not trying to put people into boxes. We're not trying to figure out which one I am, so that's how I am, and that's just how I am. You're going to have to live with me. That's not the goal. It's just to help you get an idea, and you already know that people are different. But there are kind of different types of people, and I find this very interesting myself, and I want to say that the goal of being a person, the goal of the Christian is to be so spirit-filled, nobody can figure out which one you are. It talks about a sanguine, a pleasure-seeking and sociable person. They're those fun people that is so great to be around, unless you're on an 8-hour trip. Some of you maybe drove 8 hours to get here, I don't know. But they're just a lot of fun. But don't ask them to plug in the coffee for your parent-teacher meeting because they will forget. They'll be out there just talking to everybody and just having a great time and meeting the people and telling the jokes. And when it's time for coffee, you realize it hasn't even been plugged in yet. We have the choleric or the choleric, ambitious leader-type people. They're the ones that probably drove you down here and got you here on time. And we have melancholic, analytical, thoughtful people. And then the phlegmatic, the relaxed, the quiet, the laid back. And you know, all of those people can be a mix of one or two. Really interesting thing, there are some opposites up there. The melancholy and the sanguine tend to be opposite. And they tend to marry each other. And the choleric or the choleric and the sanguine, they tend to be opposites. And they sometimes marry each other. Opposites attract, apparently. We need opposites on our teams. We need opposites on our school, faculty. Each one of these different types of people, and I'll just repeat, I'm not promoting this necessarily. It just helps us to understand that there are different types of people. We're wired differently. We're structured differently. I have a good friend in Canada who's building a brand new house. And it's not because he wants a new house. He did the math, and it's going to cost him about the same money to build a brand new house with a lot more efficient fixtures and things like that, heating, than to repair the old one. You see, the old one has sagging floors, it's got some foundation issues, it's designed very poorly for the needs of his family, and rather than try to change what's already there and remodel, he's building a new house. And I would say to you, don't try to change the people you work with. You're a lot better off to adapt to what their strengths are and their weaknesses. It's also interesting to note that the sanguine tends to have very happy, fresh, exciting strengths. They also tend to have happy, fresh, exciting weaknesses. The cholerics tend to have strong and leadership type, push them down strengths. That's how their weaknesses are too. And you can take it down through the list. The melancholies are dark, deep, analytical, and their weaknesses are also kind of dark and deep and hard to get to. And the phlegmatics, well, they're easygoing and laid back, and that's kind of how their weaknesses are too. I would note that our greatest strength, out of the control of the Holy Spirit, becomes our greatest weakness. So if you're really good at something, watch it. Check it in with God and what He has. I brought my Winnie the Pooh book this morning, and I was going to read to you. That clock is just racing away. I'll see if I can do this really quickly. Give you about 30 seconds of Winnie the Pooh. Because we have some of these different kinds of people in the book. There's a young man that came down to work with us a number of years ago in Guatemala, and we got to know him over a couple weeks. And my wife said to him one day, she said, "You know, we should call you Eeyore." He said, "Well, that's what they called me at my last job." So chapter 6, Eeyore has a birthday and gets two presents. If you haven't read it, read it sometime. Eeyore, the old gray donkey, stood by the side of the stream and looked at himself in the water. "Pathetic," he said. "That's what it is. Pathetic." He turned and walked slowly down the stream for 20 yards, splashed across it, and walked slowly back on the other side, then looked at himself in the water again. "As I thought," he said, "no better from this side. But nobody minds, nobody cares. Pathetic, that's what it is." There was a crackling noise in the bracken behind him, and out came Pooh. "Good morning, Eeyore," said Pooh. "Good morning, Pooh Bear," said Eeyore gloomily. "If it is a good morning," he said, "which I doubt," said he. "Why, what's the matter?" "Nothing, Pooh Bear, nothing. We can't all, and some of us don't. That's all there is to it." "Can't what?" said Pooh, rubbing his nose. "Gaiety, song and dance. Here we go round the mulberry bush." "Oh," said Pooh. He thought for a long time and then asked, "What mulberry bush is that?" "Bonhomie," went on Eeyore gloomily. "French word meaning bonhomie," he explained. "I'm not complaining, but there it is." Pooh sat down on a large stone, and he sings this little song. And then Eeyore says, "You can sing." And Pooh says, "I am." "Some can," says Eeyore. "Why? What's the matter?" "Is anything the matter?" "You seem so sad, Eeyore." "Sad? Why should I be sad? It's my birthday, the happiest day of the year." "Your birthday?" said Pooh in great surprise. "Of course it is. Can't you see? Look at all the presents I have." He waved a foot from side to side. "Look at the birthday cake, candles and pink sugar." Pooh looked first to the right, then to the left. "Presents?" said Pooh. "Birthday cake? Where?" There you have a melancholy and a sanguine meeting. And they can't even get on the same page. "What's the matter?" "Nothing's the matter. Everything's the matter." Read it sometime if you like. I won't for time. I'd love to read you the part where they take him their presents. Like a house, We have a welcome mat and a friendly front door. That's the part of us that we don't mind if people see. We like to let people get to know us, up at least until a certain point, and that's where we are, and that's who we are. It's our accomplishments, our abilities, our charm, or our personality, and that's who we think we are, and that's who we try to be. I find the greatest lessons that we learn at school are learned about ourselves. And as you work with someone, as you work with the team, you find out things about them that we'll be looking at in a minute. A couple of years ago in Guatemala as well, an older man that hadn't been outside of the U.S. very often, he said to me, you know, after supper, he said, "Stephen, what's one of the greatest things you face? What is the greatest difficulty you face here living and working in Guatemala?" I said, "Oh, probably getting along with the fellow missionaries. Because where there's people, there's problems. And we are a bunch of sinners saved by grace. Like a house, we have skeletons in the closet." And I want to take that positively and negatively. There are some surprises. There are some things that just kind of jump out at you halfway through the year, or maybe after 3 or 4 years. And I would encourage you, especially if you're part of the team that kind of sets the team up, look for those hidden gifts in the people that are working with you, because they're there. There are people that are incredibly gifted, and you don't see it for 2 or 3 years, or maybe you're not like that. I am very much a promoter of getting people to do what they're good at, because I think if they do what they're good at, they're going to tend to do it well. I use this little saying all the time in Guatemala: we don't get paid enough for what we do, so we may as well do something we like instead of something we don't like. Realize, too, that people are different, and therefore, something that you really don't care to do and you kind of do it as a sacrifice and, well, you'll do it because it's got to get done, is maybe something a co-worker, a partner, team player with you would love to do. He'd just love to do, but since you always have to do it, they don't even volunteer. And that's unfortunate, because we're losing a lot of energy. And we're going to a lot of effort that we wouldn't have to. So there are those surprises that are good and nice to find. And then there are also some things that aren't so nice to find. As you work with people, you realize that they have some character flaws, maybe some habits, some hobbies that aren't so good. Maybe they're lazy. Ooh, that hurt. Or opinionated. Our past is so much a part of us. And if you go into our past, often you find things that still hurt. It's where we come from, how we were raised. It affects our perspective. It affects our worldview. And yet we're beyond that. We're not living in our past anymore, but there's still sometimes some stuff there that needs to get dealt with. And sometimes I find we just keep going, and it's still there. It's still kind of there. There are experiences that affect us for the rest of our lives. And those can be mistakes. And those can temper the way we do things. And those of you who have taught school for more than 5 or 10 years know what I'm talking about, because you see this new teacher come in, and they're so excited about this, and they're just tearing into this, and you say, "Boy." And you maybe say something, you say, you know, "Well, that's not really going to work for you." And they're like, "What? This is great." And then a while later, they prove you wrong. Maybe they succeeded where you didn't. Or maybe they come to you later and say, "You know, you were right." But experience really helps us and sometimes hinders us. I thought of a Well, I was preparing this, and I almost didn't share it, but it's an example of one of those crazy little things that I will never do again. I will never buy my dad a pair of shoes again. Because when I was about 15, my brother and I, we went together, we saw dad didn't have good shoes, not the kind that were comfortable, not the kind that, you know, were kind of acceptable. He wore these old trashy things that he had bought at a secondhand store, and he'd go to our school picnic, and it just kind of bothered me. You know, he didn't have shoes like the other dads, and furthermore, his weren't comfortable. He had comfortable work shoes and work boots, and that's what he used. So we went out and we bought him a pair of Reebok with air soles, and they were just great. They were even the right color. They were black. And we gave them to him for his birthday. And we were so glad. You know, he never really wore those shoes. He tried them on, and he thanked us for them, and he kind of liked them, but they pinched his toes. They were the right size, but I guess they weren't wide enough or something. And, you know, I was so disappointed. My brother and I, actually, we were about the same shoe size as he. We wore them out. But there are things back there that change us. Reminds me of the words of one of my heroes, the Apostle Paul, who says, brethren, I count not myself to have apprehended or arrived, but this one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind and reaching forth unto those things which are before, I press toward the mark of the prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus. Like a house, we have cluttered garages. We mentioned bad habits. Should clean those things up. Also, I see in Romans those things that we don't want to do, and we tend to do them, and we go back to them. It's part of how we're made, and it takes a lot of discipline and a lot of the Spirit presence to get away from those things and not go back to them on a daily basis. For I know that in me, that is, in my flesh, dwelleth no good thing. For to will is present with me, but how to perform that which is good I find not. For the good that I would do not, pardon me, for the good that I would, I do not. But the evil which I would not, that I do. And I think we all know what he's talking about there. We have areas of weakness. Maybe we have a besetting sin. You know, I look at these verses in Hebrews 12, and there it talks about the sin which doth so easily beset us. And I work with people, and I work with sometimes their grandparents and their moms and dads and them, and you can kind of see some tendencies that run in the family. And I think to myself, you know, I probably have those tendencies too. I have those weaknesses. And I think all of us have things we're working on, right, in our lives. And those are things that can affect the team, that can really put a damper on our relationships, or it can really mess up the day or the week or the year, depending what's going on at home as well. It affects us a lot. We are all sinners. And we all need to deal with this sin thing on a daily basis. I wrote this up here because in Guatemala we have a lot of alcoholics, and a couple of years ago Alcoholics Anonymous came to our town, and some of my friends go there, and they say this thing over and over. I didn't catch it at first, but when I started talking to them and I started hearing from different ones of them, they would always kind of open their line with that. They'd say, I'm an alcoholic, but presently I do not drink. And then they invited me to one of their meetings. They were having their annual meeting, and they wanted me to come and be there and find out about their group and stuff. And so I went, and I found out this is part of their deal. This is part of their whole focus. They teach them that they are alcoholics. admit it. And then try to come away from it. And they're told that they have this sickness and they'll have it for the rest of their life. But they have to try to work with it and try to overcome it. And every day, you know, take steps not to go back to where they came. And I saw something beautiful as I applied it to my own life. You know, I'm just a sinner. And I'll always be just a sinner. But I can live in victory. But I better not get too haughty in that. I better not think that I'm somebody super special, because then I'm going to be a sinner again. They celebrate their 1 year of not drinking more than they'd celebrate their birthday. And at their meetings, they tell each other, you know, how long it's been since they had their last drink. Some of them are going for 7 years. Some of them are going for 15 years. So how long has it been since you last sinned? I'm not here to put anyone on a guilt trip, but we have to admit, we've got a cluttered garage. And that's what we're talking about. I'd like you to repeat with me, I am a sinner, and presently, I am living in victory. All together, I am a sinner, and presently, I am living in victory. Again, I am a sinner, and presently, I am living in victory. Let's keep going on to victory, on and on. I'm sure there are a lot of other things that we could say, how people are like a house, but this is about where I finish up with this part of it. We all have a china cupboard. We all have a china cabinet, is what we call them in Canada. We have things about us that are really special, really beautiful. And as people, we use those things. But another thing I've found with working with people is how frail we are. Sometimes how close to the surface those emotions are, what I'm really feeling, how close it is to what I'm doing. And I'm planning to drop this plate here in about 2 minutes, unless somebody comes up and saves it. And you can have it. If you come up and get it, you can take it home with you. But this is a china plate. And I think it represents you and me very well, parts of us. Have you ever been talking to somebody and you ask them a question and they start to cry? And you say, what did I just do? I know, especially when I was 18 and 20 and 22, when people would cry, boy, I wanted to find an exit. I wanted to get out of there. I didn't think that was a good thing. But sometimes people like to talk about it, and sometimes we just don't know what to say. We're so weak. I tell the guys that I work with, you're going to take that home. You're going to save the plate. Well, way to go. There you go. Do you think it would break if I drop it? Have you seen people break? Yeah. See, that's the thing. We're so fragile sometimes. I tell the fellows I work with, you know, today, you could just push me over. And it's sort of my way of telling them, I'm having a very rough day today. And they sometimes ask, and sometimes they don't. But I think we need to find ways to communicate that to each other and be willing to be vulnerable and let people see our weakness, especially those people that are close to us, and we can trust them. I'm going to read a poem that's very special to me, and it brings out this thing that people are not who we think they are often. People are sometimes dealing with such major things, and we don't even realize it. Like the little guy they sent to my office one day, he wasn't doing his homework. He was a good student. But his teacher was just done with him because she had worked with him. He had missed 2 days of school and there was no permission sent from his home. And she asked him why he had missed school and he said, well, they were just busy at home. he was working. She said, well, what kind of work? Well, just kind of around the house, hauling water and some firewood. And she couldn't get anything out of him. And so she sent him over to my office. And he came in, and I said, how are you doing? He said, I'm fine. I said, well, that's great. We've got a problem here. You're not doing your homework. You said you'd bring it today, yesterday, and you didn't. What's going on? Nothing. Why did you miss those 2 days? I was working at home. I said, come on, you tell me what's going on. It's okay. What are you doing this afternoon? Well, they're going to go get some flowers. I said, oh, really? What are you going to do with the flowers? We're going to take them to my sister's grave. She died 3 days ago. That's why he had missed school. Why couldn't he say it? I don't know. Maybe he was scared of breaking down in front of his teacher. Needless to say, I sent him back to his classroom, and the teacher went to visit his home that afternoon. The poem is The Fool's Prayer by Edward Rowland Sill, written back in the 1800s. The royal feast was done. The king sought some new sport to banish care, and to his jester cried, Sir Fool, kneel now and make for us a prayer. The jester doffed his cap and bells and stood the mocking court before. They could not see the bitter smile behind the painted grin he wore. He bowed his head and bent his knee upon the monarch's silken stool. His pleading voice arose, O Lord, be merciful to me, a fool. No pity, Lord, could change the heart from red with wrong to white as wool. The rod must heal the sin, but Lord, be merciful to me, a fool. 'Tis not by guilt the onward sweep of truth and right, O Lord, we stay. 'Tis by our follies that so long we hold the earth from heaven away. These clumsy feet still in the mire go crushing blossoms without end. These hard, well-meaning hands we thrust amongst the heartstrings of a friend. The ill-timed truth we might have kept, who knows how sharp it pierced and stung? The word we had not sense to say, who knows how grandly it had rung? Our faults no tenderness should ask, the chastening stripes must cleanse them all. But for our blunders, oh, in shame, before the eyes of heaven we fall. Earth bears no balsam for mistakes. Men crown the knave and scourge the tool that did his will. But thou, O Lord, be merciful to me, a fool. The room was hushed, in silence rose the king, and sought his gardens cool, and walked apart and murmured low, be merciful to me, a fool. So who are the people on the team? You have a little box down in your notes, and I'd encourage you to personalize that. You can write names if you wish. You can write positions. In my little box, I wrote the school board, the principal or the lead teacher, the teachers, the new teacher. We have 3 lines of teachers. See, I think we need to realize that we're all part of a team, but we have different things to do on the team. So if your school doesn't have a lead teacher or a principal, I'd suggest you get one. Know who's in charge, know who's going to make that call. Seasoned teachers, realize who you are, realize the part that you need to play to make the thing work. I'm going to get out here on some people's toes. But if all you do is go to school and worry about what's going on in your classroom, you're not a team player. You see, in many of our settings, at least where I come from, there is very little teacher training. You as a seasoned teacher need to be part of that training for that new teacher. You need to be there for them. You might have a cleaner, the guy who does the maintenance, the van driver, a trustee. I don't know how your school is set up, but you fill in the box. That's the team. And then we have parents and students, but since I have another 45 minutes to talk about them in the next couple days, we'll look at them later. But that's the team. Those are the people that have to work together and make this thing function. And I think we need to remember all the people that we have on the team. That's why I made sort of a long list, because it's easy to look at the two teachers you teach with or the three of you and say, well, that's the team. No, the school has a lot more behind it than that. And you would do well to use those people and get them involved. I find often people are more than willing to do things, but they just haven't been asked. So ask. Don't feel bad or don't feel scared to ask people to do things for you. They love that. And some of us maybe take it too far, but I say, you know, we don't want them to lose the blessing, so we'll let them work for us. We'll let them do that for us. Across the sheet, you have a title that says, What Jesus Said About the Body. Jesus said, we are members of his body. So we are his members. Christ is part of the team. You might want to write that over there in the box, because that's really important. And in about 2 minutes, you'll see that it's really important. 1 Corinthians 6:15 says, your bodies, do you not know that your bodies are members of Christ? So you are an extension of Christ in the classroom. And that gives me a lot of confidence. When I get up in the morning and go to school and I feel kind of overwhelmed with what might come, I remember that I'm part of the team and Christ is on the team. So there is no question that can't be answered. There's no situation that can't be worked through. Because we are members of Christ himself. 1 Corinthians 12:27 says, each one of you is a part of it. And I'd like to apply it to teaching. I realize here Jesus is talking about the church. I feel that the school is an extension of the church and that we are all a part of that. And remember that, especially with those people that it's hard to get along with, that think differently than you do. Those people that have some of those glaring weaknesses, they are also part of the body. And that's a major advantage. Ephesians 1:23 says, which is his body, we are part of his body, the fullness of him who fills everything in every way. Another translation says it's complete. It's Christ's body and it's complete. There's nothing missing. And I believe that. I believe that with all my heart. And I believe that God puts the team together at the beginning of the year. You see, I believe that nothing happens by chance. The fact that I'm standing here in front of you is a bit of a miracle. At least for me. But that's all ordained. Those who couldn't come, that's part of the deal. And the people you're going to be working with this next year is part of God's plan. And I don't believe that God would put three people together and ask them to do something that they're not able to do, or with a part missing. He doesn't ask us to put a puzzle together and have five pieces missing. He is complete. We as extensions and parts of his body can be complete when we work with the team. And I believe that very, very strongly. And we can talk about that later if you like. God puts everything we need there, even though it doesn't seem like it. So what if we don't have the same goals? Is a question that we ask. Sorry, the fifth point, I was missing that. We need to feed and take care of the body, as Christ does the church. So you have a responsibility to your coworkers. You have a responsibility to your principal. And I see I'm not going to have time to say it at the end, so I'm going to say it now. Protect your leaders. Come behind them, support them, encourage them. I know what it's like to preach every Sunday for 2 months, and nobody ever said, that sermon spoke to me. And that probably surprises you, but it's because of the culture where I live. But I need that. Your leader needs that. They need our encouragement. They're out there facing the winds of opposition. And yeah, you see some opposition, but your leaders really, really need to know that you support them. They really need to know that when they made a bad decision, and, you know, time has a way of showing us whether we were right or wrong, they need to hear from you that you're okay with that. You know, you kind of thought it would have been better to do that, but they decided this, and throw yourself into it, and if it doesn't work, tell them it's okay. We can go back and we can try that again. Run it again. They need to hear that from you. So what if you don't have the same goals? I would say real quick here, if you don't have the same basic goals, then find a different school. Go find another team. You've got to have the same goals. Pretty well. Especially the basic ones. And I put some goals up here. You have them on your sheet too. What are worthy goals? Remember that we're preparing children for life. We're not necessarily and totally preparing them to pass their GED or to graduate or to become university students. We are preparing them for life. We need to remember that every child is an individual. Every child is a person, a different person. And we need to help the parents achieve the goals they have for their children. And I would have you just write in parentheses behind that most of the time. Because I work with some parents that have some pretty lousy goals for their children. But I've seen a lot of teachers that are steering or pushing a child in a direction that the parent really doesn't intend for them to go. And we're going to look at that tomorrow. But who really is in charge? Are you or the parent? Who decides? Some practical points to becoming a team player. Adapt yourself to people. Don't try to change them. Remember, my cousin's building a new house because it's too much work to try to change the old one. And some people, you will not change, and you cannot change, and I would suggest you don't try to change them. What works for me is to pray for them. If you really, really see something in a coworker that you feel is worthy of addressing, spend some time in prayer for them and just watch how God in the next 3 days or 3 weeks turns those people around. He can get in there and wiggle the wires where you never will. You'll just build walls. Understand that we all have tremendous strengths and weaknesses. Be willing to let your coworkers know what your weaknesses are. Be willing to better them. Be willing to work on them. Be willing to try stuff that you're not good at. Be flexible. I'm sure you've all heard that blessed are the flexible, for they will not get bent out of shape. Remember that we are complete as a team. God brings us together in His completeness. Every team has to have a captain. So there's going to be somebody there making the call. It's not always going to be the call you wanted. It's not always going to be the one you like. We're going to talk about that in a minute. But they are the captain, and you're on the team, and so support him. My dad tells this story, and I'll tell it to you, about a church that they had their meeting, a business meeting, and they decided to do some things at church. And there was one brother that strongly opposed it. For whatever reason, he was not for it at all. He was very vocal in the meeting. When they finally voted, and the brotherhood voted that that's what they were going to do, and they were going to meet on Saturday, and they were going to do it, he did not raise his hand. And when they said anyone opposed, he did. And Saturday morning, at 8 o'clock when they were going to get together, they got there to the church to do the work. He was already there. He was ready to help. Because he was part of the brotherhood. And the brotherhood decided to do that, and so he was going to help. Let's be that kind of a person. Be willing to accept and try ideas of others. I'd say that to the captains, too, of the team. You know, be willing to work with somebody else's idea. Be humble enough to apologize and to forgive. 15 reasons that are not good enough to discard or oppose an idea. And you will not find this, I don't think, anywhere, because it's what I've come from. This is more for the principals, I guess, for the leaders or the seasoned teachers. I've run into every one of these. So it's not just a bunch of imagination. Don't oppose an idea just because who had the idea. Don't oppose an idea just because it wasn't your idea. Don't oppose an idea just because it will make extra work for you. Don't oppose an idea just because you happen to be in a bad mood. I think it's okay to say, you know what, I don't want to talk about this right now. Let's talk about it later. You know, maybe tomorrow or after lunch. But don't just say no because you're having a bad mood or in a bad situation right then. Don't oppose an idea just because you don't feel like it. And you can fill in a bunch there. Don't oppose an idea just because you have a sore throat or a sprained ankle or a cold or any other reason. That's really not the reason. Be clear, be specific. Don't oppose an idea just because of where it could lead. Now, I know that's maybe far out for some of you, but you should never get in a car then either, unless you're driving, because they might stop somewhere you don't want to. I think it's okay to discuss where it could lead, but don't oppose it just because. It could lead way over there. Don't oppose an idea just because you've never tried it before. Don't oppose an idea just because everyone else thinks it's a good idea and is excited about it. I've seen that happen. You know, there's always got to be somebody that's contrary, and that's okay. We like them too. Don't oppose an idea just because you've tried it before and it didn't work. You know, maybe you did. But instead of opposing it and saying, no, that won't work, I already tried it, you should bring your experience in and help them find solutions based on that experience. Don't oppose an idea just because it could bring some problems. Believe me, every idea will bring some problems. But it still may be a valid idea, a good idea. Don't oppose an idea because you weren't asked to do your favorite thing, or because you might not excel in what you've been asked to do, or because you might not receive any credit. Those are not good enough reasons to completely oppose an idea. I'd like to close by reading a poem, a favorite one of mine by a favorite author, Edgar Guest. It Couldn't Be Done. Somebody said that it couldn't be done, but he with a chuckle replied that maybe it couldn't, but he would be one who wouldn't say so till he had tried. So he buckled right in with the trace of a grin on his face. If he worried, he hid it. He started to sing as he tackled the thing that couldn't be done, and he did it. Somebody scoffed, "Oh, you'll never do that. At least no one ever has done it." But he took off his coat and he took off his hat. And the first thing we knew, he'd begun it. With a lift of his chin and a bit of a grin, without any doubting or quit it, he started to sing as he tackled the thing that couldn't be done, and he did it. There are thousands to tell you it cannot be done. There are thousands to prophesy failure. There are thousands to point out to you one by one the dangers that wait to assail you. But just buckle in with a bit of a grin. Just take off your coat and go to it. Just start in to sing as you tackle the thing that couldn't be done, and you'll do it. May God bless you.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.